The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's bestest, most awesomest, and pretty much only podcast dedicated to the world's best superhero team, the Doom Patrol.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can contact us by email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and we're on Facebook, and our episodes are all available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com, and we are part of the Inner Circle Comics Network, which is an exciting place to be a part of.
Yes.
So there's some good shows on there.
They're all good shows.
Except for that bad one.
Yeah, let's not talk about those guys. Sheesh. Yes, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter, at AvantGarve. You can also find our sentient show Twitter account, Wilfred, which is at WFDPod.
Yeah. Today on the show, we're looking at Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol, which at the very start of the Kupperberg Lytle run. So this is the comic that brought the Doom Patrol back in the 80s. So we haven't covered that yet, have we?
No. It's just before Morrison's wackiness kicked in.
Yeah. And because we haven't covered it, that's why we're going to do it now. So anyway, how was your week in comics?
It was good because I've finally caught up on my backlog of comics. And I even got all of last week's comics read and put away. So that was cool. But yeah, I've had a lot of stuff to read through.
Right.
Yeah, interesting ones were things like Dr. Fate. I'm enjoying that. That was really cool. The final issue of Hawkeye finally came out months after it was meant to.
They can release that hardcover now for me to buy.
Finally, yes. Finally. I'm so glad they didn't launch something like an all-new Hawkeye series before this one came out. Oh, wait. Exactly what they did.
They wouldn't do that. They're Marvel. They can, you know, they don't restart things at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. Oh, double digits. Oh, can't have that happen to one of our series. I also tried the new Island magazine from Image Comics, which is kind of like an anthology magazine, but part comic book as well. It was interesting, but it's like a $10 book.
Yowza.
Yeah.
Is that Australian $10 or
That's American? Australian $10. American, it's like $7 or $8.
Yeah, bloody hell.
So I mean, it was a good product. It was a good read, but I don't know if I'll be returning to it every month just yet. So, it was an interesting mixed bag last week. How was your week in comics and such?
I had fun today. I had a bit of time this afternoon, and I did that. You know when you've just got a pile of random comics that have all come out of different boxes and you've been, you know, haven't put them away yet? So I did a run around all my, about 20 boxes, putting a whole pile away and ended up with a new pile because I kept seeing things I wanted to read. Yeah, and my boxes, they're a bit of a, you know, surprise package where I go, oh, that's in this box. Oh look at that.
Oh, look, I've still got that thing. Wow. Yeah. I'll give that a reread.
Yeah, so I pulled out some interesting stuff. I might do some Doom Patrol related tweets with a few pages from a certain comic that I'm pretty sure you've never read.
Ooh.
Now
you're just showing off.
I am a bit. Apart from that, it's just been the usual library run for me. So I read March by Nate Powell and other people, which was really good. That's the American Civil Rights true story stuff. Mm. So that was good. Yeah. And was the tenor, Black Canary's a tenor, Blood Spell by Paul Dini and some other dude. That was really good. Big on details.
Yes. It wasn't Joe Quinone's by any chance, was it?
It was. Yes, it was. Go. Very good art.
Their advertising worked on me. I haven't read it, but I remember the page ad for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a very fun read, and it, yeah, worthwhile.
Mm.
Yeah.
There was lots of stockings in the ad, I remember.
Fishnets.
Fishnets. Fishnets everywhere.
Yeah. It's a bit sexy on the girls.
Imagine that.
Is that the ticking that I hear? That's
some awkward ticking coming up, of course.
No, the ticking's not awkward. It's this, the conversation about it.
Yes, that's the doom clock.
Yay!
Okay, so unsurprisingly, no big changes on the clock face this week. The last book for our favourite team was still issue 22 of volume 5, the Giffen Clark run. Cover dated July 2011, but actually went on sale May 4 that year. So it's been 4 years and 11 weeks since we had our last Doom Patrol book. The last appearance of the team was in their one-panel sneak peek in the JLU 8-pager that's available on Comixology and DCComics.com. That came out 8 weeks ago. So by my reckoning, it'll be the same amount of time in which Robot Man will appear in JLU.
Because
I think it's issue 11 of that just came out, and he appears in issue 13.
Okay.
So everyone go and buy issue 13 of JLU.
So that way when DC it comes
knows,
out.
Yeah, when it comes... Well, yeah. So that way DC knows, huh? Well,
unless you've got a time machine.
Well, that'd be handy. I think you'd do more than just buy a comic. Oh, no, you could buy Action Comics number 1.
Yeah.
Or Detective Comics 27.
Yeah, you could.
You could. Anyway, speaking of history, this week in Doom Patrol history.
Sorry.
on sale this week in 1967 for the princely sum of 12 US cents and cover dated September 67 was issue 114 of My Greatest Adventure, written by the team of, by the team of Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. And this story, the main story in it, was titled Call the Conqueror, which saw friend of the chief, Dr. Anton Karevic, fall victim to science experiments gone wrong. Oh, what a cliche. And he was transformed, or devolved, if you will, into a Neanderthal man who then decided to menace the city with a sonic weapon he invented before the mishap. So, of course, the team went in and saved the day. Unsurprisingly, this was Core's only ever appearance, which was a bit of a familiar occurrence with the villains towards this end of the Patrol's run. Sort of one-and-done villains. Never saw them again. Things like the Arsenal and the Mutant Masters. So, yeah. Because it was only 7 issues later, and they went bye-bye.
Yeah. I saw the Core's live once. Not the same thing.
No, not the same thing at all.
That was a good concert if you like to sit down. It was nice. Yeah, it was comfy. Cool.
They had, you know, sonic stuff going on too, but not dangerous.
Right. Awesome.
That's a doom clock for this week.
Nice doom clocking, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
So this week on Doomsplaining, we're going to Volume 2 of the Doom Patrol, Issues 1, 2, and 3, which are, well, the first one is cover dated
October of 87,
and it came out on July the 14th, 1987, mm-hmm. which is, that's almost this date, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost.
So, what, 28 years ago or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, we're not good at maths. Maths is not our strong suit. We do Doom Patrol podcasting, not a maths podcast. I'm just pointing that out.
I've just checked the Doom calculator, and you are correct. It's 28 years.
Yay! the price was 75 cents, and it was an oversized issue with no ads. Mm. And if you want to read this issue, you can go and get it for the price of nothing on Comixology right now.
That is so awesome.
It's sitting there for free. Just wait. There's a whole stack of them of Comixology. I think they've got still some in stock on Comixology, so go in and grab one before they're all gone.
So the shelves aren't bare of Doom Patrol stuff on Comixology, is what you're saying?
No. This issue is sitting there for free for you to grab.
Nice.
And read, and you'll get a nice copy. And one of the nicest things about this is it has a wraparound cover, which shows it's a bit of a grab bag of Doom Patrol history. So there's like there's Rita and there's Reactron, who's going to be in the Supergirl show. We haven't talked about Reactron much.
No.
There's Monsieur Mallet and the Brain. You can see Madame Rouge on the back cover. There's Changeling. They seem to be drawing on that Teen Titans story we covered a few eps back. Yeah, and I think there's a bad-looking Mento on the back with a new design.
Yeah, that has to be Mento. No one else would wear a helmet that stupid.
Yeah, it's got a white motorcycle helmet with, like, antennas sticking out of it. And then you've got Valentina Vostok, and you can see her butt. and then on the other side, on the front cover, you can see, well, they've got those robot gun suit things that the guys were wearing in the Teen Titans comic. You can see Joshua Clay exploding some thugs.
He looks like a very angry accountant.
He does. He's in a green suit. Nice green suit. Yeah. Looks like Gumby. yeah, so it's all happening on that cover.
It's very action-packed. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, this is written by Paul Kupperberg. And it's drawn by a guy called Steve Lytle, who's very good. He's in the sort of Perez school of attention to detail, I would say. And a guy called Gary Martin is inking. And the lettering was by John E. Workman, who did all those Morrison ones as well. And the colorist is Carl Gafford. And the editor was Mike Gold. Gold. Always. Sorry. Yeah. So it opens with a lady that we know to be Irani, but you find that out as the comic goes on, and she is the current leader of the Doom Patrol since the team got blown up in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And she put the team together in the 70s when Robot Man was found to be alive. And she is visiting the site of the team's demise, so that island where they got bombed, and she's found Niles' wheelchair. And she does a bit of reminiscing and then smiles because it means that Niles is probably still alive. And then she zooms off in a motorboat and we see that time for some flashbacks, some reminiscing, some telling us what's what. And she goes through the team and tells how Robot Man came back and got his new body that didn't last long because it got redesigned by George Perez. And they formed a new team, and they had an encounter with General Immortus, who wanted to steal immortality from Irani, and things went wrong for him, and they escaped and got out of there. But while she's reminiscing, we're seeing that she's being observed by a submarine, a American submarine, which is monitoring her and what she's up to for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mysteries, yes.
Anyway, we see that there's a report on her movements coming to some base, and there's some suit guy, and he's telling a lady in a green coat with a cravat. And we see that this is Valentina Vostok, Negative Woman from the 70s.
She says, "I used to be Negative Woman, but that has passed. I work for this government now, nothing else."
So she doesn't throw out the negative energy anymore. Yeah, it's unclear. Is she prevented from it? Or
I don't think it's explained at all in this story.
Yeah. Anyway, the spy guy is saying that they've lost track of Irani, and Valentine says, "Okay, I know where she's going, and she'll be going to... we should increase surveillance on Cliff Steele, or a.k.a. Robot Man to us." And then we see the saddest page in all of comics with Cliff Steele riding a horse.
That poor horse.
That poor bloody horse. I don't... Why would a robot man ride a horse, ever?
Look, he's clearly come into some money and invested in some land and a horse.
He hates horses.
You know, so he's just chilling out on his property in California.
I just don't know why you would go, I've got a robot buddy, I'll chuck it on top of a horse and ride around. So that's pretty sad. Anyway, he's soon alerted to an explosion on his property, which turns out to be a helicopter getting blown up by Arani, whose code name is Celsius, due to her hot and cold powers. So they could just call her Taps or running water. Anyway, so she's aware that she's being followed and decided to blow up a helicopter with people in it. But I think it's one of those A-team explosions where the people get out coughing rather than actually burn to a crisp.
Yeah, I don't think anyone died in the explosion. They saw, look, she's going to blow up our chopper. Get out.
Yeah, so then we see the agents jumping out and they start shooting at Arani, but Cliff gets in the way and the bullets bounce off him because he's made of robot body-ness.
Comic book science at its finest.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see the team starting to reassemble, but it's not a happy reunion. Bit of recrimination, and Cliff is really sick of Irani going on about how Niles called her. The chief is actually her husband, because he's like, we've never heard of you, and I'm sick of your wild goose chase.
And which he was saying, you know, when they last met in those Showcase Presents issues back in the 70s.
Yep.
And as Cliff says, husband, Irani, tell me another one, honey.
Yeah, that's a bit. It's all a bit aggressive between the two. But she said, Niles is alive and you owe him, Cliff. And Cliff can't argue with that. And he said, yeah, okay, I owe him. And then he drags his poor horse back to the Deban. And then we cut to some Himalayan monastery where we see that someone has taken over this monastery and being a bit of a bastard to the locals.
Pretty much.
And we see a shadowy figure in a, let's call it what it is. It's a like a Masters of the Universe Dodgem car.
Yes.
It's like the most 70s metal Dodgem car you could imagine. It's red, it's got skulls, it's got spikes, it's got teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. It's like an action vehicle for an action figure from the 80s.
Yeah. And, you know, the troops look like G.I. Joe design cast-offs. It's all very action. It's toys. It's a toy line.
It's a toy line that never happened.
Yeah. And we see that the guy in the chair is a dude called Kalki, who is, or Kalki? I don't know.
Let's say Kalki.
Kalki. Let's go with Kalki.
Okay.
Yeah, he looks like a Masters of the Universe villain. He's all armored up. He's got horns on his hood. He's got metal cod pieces, metal legs. He's got a scythe instead of a hand. Mm. So it's a bit like a praying mantis. And he has like a mouth on his chest. Yeah.
He's looking very 80s action figure villain.
Yeah, and he's sitting in his heavy metal dodgem chair. It's all wired up, and he's a great monologuer. And he's a pompous twit. Yeah, there's a bit of third person talking going on, and laughing to himself. But he has a shtick, doesn't he? Yeah. And someone from the village has been caught trying to escape, and there's some poor old man, and they've brought him in, and he said, he says, escape from your evil. And he said, I am not evil. I am Kalki. I am your lord. And he said, you blaspheme. You are misguided. I am beyond mortal judgments. And then his chest inside the mouth sort of opens in three sections, and like tentacles come out and hands, and they all grab this dude and pull him into the chest and consume him, which is pretty weird and yucky.
Especially the big grin that Kalki himself has after his chest has devoured this poor old man.
Yeah, yes. that's messed up.
So that's our creepy villain introduced.
Yeah, creepy villain, tick.
Yes.
Now, next we cut to a doctor's office where we see that Joshua Clay is disguised himself as a middle-aged doctor in his green suit. Mm. And he's just finishing with a patient, an old lady who looks like she's from old money, I'd say. when a guy who looks like a robot in disguise walks in and makes everyone very uncomfortable. Mm. And he says, "You're Joshua Clay from the Doom Patrol, and it's time for us to get the team back together." And Josh is like, "No, I've got a new life. I've changed my name. I'm calling myself Dr. Carmichael now. Good trick." And he's obviously bitter about his relationship with Val Vostok going nowhere in the past. So the team's fallen apart. There's no love there. But Cliff talks to him until he gets so angry that he blows things up.
That's how you get a superpowered menace on side. Get them angry. Yeah. Get them to use their powers on you.
Yeah. So the conclusion of that conversation is basically, congratulations, you're no longer a doctor, dude. So the team, the newly formed team of Arani, Josh and Cliff has reconvened on the island where the Doom Patrol got blown up. And Cliff's gone submerged walking. And he comes out and does that ineffectual crying that only a robot man can do because he found a finger on the ocean floor and had a wedding on.
No, he found her in mostly intact body.
Oh, okay. Yeah, mostly intact body.
And then he saw the wedding ring on the finger and it was inscribed to Rita, all my heart, Steve, bloody Mento.
That's Mento, yeah. What an a-hole. Yeah, so he's upset about that.
Just a bit.
Can't even cry.
Yeah.
So and then Arani's very insensitive and so get over it, and they have a little argument and a little bit of flashbacking in the chatting, and then aircraft start coming at them.
And I have to say, yeah, very 80s action figure vehicle looking.
It is super action figure. It is like a toy ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you were building things in real life, you'd make them red.
Yeah,
and
red.
Gold and blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'd have your pilots completely exposed on the top of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And you'd have your full metal action chair be able to, you know, jump up out through the roof of your big red airship.
And fire lasers from its horns.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Arani seems to recognize Kalki, which is a bit awkward.
Mm.
So fight scene, lots of pages, and Cliff leaps up into the jaws of the flying Dodgem car and gets zapped and immobilized, and then the chest spirals open and all the hands, and they grab Cliff, and he gets pulled in, and that is the end of the issue.
Mm.
Mm. So, and then we get some back matter. So there's like who's who pages for the Doom Patrol, Celsius, Negative Woman, Tempest, who's Josh Clay. And we get some nice Joe Staten art. And then we get Robot Man by John Byrne. And then we get a, you know, little bit of a editorial double page blurb about the team.
Yeah.
And the history of the book. And it's all very nice.
Mm.
So it's a good little package, this one, isn't it?
It's a great first issue.
Yeah. Yeah, and Steve Lytle's art and Gary Martin's inks are very good. Like, there's, you know, lots of attention to detail, and, you know, the characters all look like unique people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great how much detail there is and how clean the line work is as well. It's really cool.
Yeah. And there's not much of a redesign for any of the characters. Cliff's gone back to pretty much his original look.
Yeah. Which they just fobbed off as being, you know, thanks to Dr. Will Magnus once again. So, in like one panel, in the very early page of that issue. So, yeah. Yeah. What I did like about that first issue, though, was how well the recap pages were done. Because it showed us not only the end of the original team in the 60s issues, but then it recapped the Showcase Presents issues where we first met Arani and Josh and Valentina and their fight with Immortus. So that was really cool how they did that.
Yeah. And this issue followed on from the Secret Origins Annual number one, which had the Doom Patrol in it, which sort of set up this series in a way. So that we'll be covering that in an upcoming episode.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, all right. On to issue number two, Mike.
Satellite of Doom.
That's what we need to operate from.
That's right. That's where Wilfred lives. He's watching over all of us. And I've just horrified myself. Okay, so we're kicking off. We're back in Jamaica, in a jungle somewhere, and we're seeing part of a hidden base. And we get right into the action as the very 80s G.I. Joe knockoff figures are running down hallways, and a wall explodes, and we see Joshua with his hands powered up, and he's ready to take on these bizarre people that have captured him.
He's ripped his shirt off.
Yes. He's hulked out almost.
He's ripped. Yes. He's been working out.
He is quite ripped.
And he's got a bit of a tight weave afro.
Yes. So while he's busy fighting all these guards, we have a recap of the battle that they just got dragged away in. And Irani's been incapacitated. She's in a giant tube up to her neck in water, and her hands are chained down. And she's trying to tell Josh that, you know, if you actually let me out of here, I can help you fight these guys. But of course, Josh being Josh is like, no. Then Kalki turns up and blasts him with lasers from the horns on his... on his Full Metal Action chair.
His bloody laser horns.
Laser horns. We then get some more monologuing from Kalki, and he's talking about his plan to launch a satellite, which is going to do something.
Yeah, it's going to kill lots of people. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, Kalki believes himself to be, well,
a giant Pokemon.
Giant scary Pokemon. I believe he thinks that he's actually the Hindu god Kalki, the deity of destruction. So he goes on a mad rant about how he was Matska the fish and Varaha the boar and Narissinha.
He's
half man, half lion. Yeah. So basically, he's out to destroy the world. You know, typical bad guy stuff.
Yeah, and he's coming as a winged white stallion to sweep the earth with death.
With his
now, that's where I, if I was one of the imprisoners, I'd be mocking him at this point and saying, "You don't look like a winged white stallion." And there's a nice picture of the winged white stallion with a flaming back, which makes me think of Pokemon.
Right. That's where you're getting that from. We then cut to, I guess you would call it a med lab of some sort. There's a couple of doctors there talking about a figure that they've had on life support. And this same figure starts muttering Cliff's and Rita's name. And the doctor's saying, holy cow, he's just spoken. That's not possible. His EEG's been flat all this time.
Wow.
We were sort of wondering, who could that possibly be?
I don't know. I wonder if we'll ever find out.
Well, hopefully we will. We then do another quick cutaway, and we've caught up with Cliff in an alternate dimension of some sort, fighting demons. So he survived whatever Kalki did to him. There's tendrils and tentacles and clawed hands and demons just knocking the crap out of him, basically.
Take a drink.
We then cut away to another scene back in Jamaica. There's a lot of cutaways to different locations in this story, isn't there?
Yeah, mon.
God. Yeah, that's just in case the text box saying Jamaica's International Airport wasn't enough of a clue, we have a cab driver who's asking a character, "You're going into Kingston, Mon?" It's like, oh, God. So we're introduced to a character called Lieutenant Harry Stein from the NYPD, who's now working for a different agency now. Paul, you might know if Harry Stein has appeared elsewhere before this story.
Harry Stein, yeah, Harry Stein is a Paul Kupferberg character who showed up first in The Vigilante when Kupferberg started writing that. And then he sort of popped up occasionally in Doom Patrol when with this, under the same writer, and eventually settled as one of the heads of Checkmate when Kupperberg launched that series shortly after
right.
this.
Right. Because, yeah, there's, as we follow Harry, and we're now cutting back to Valentina, sort of wandering through the jungles in Jamaica trying to find the team. There's lots of discussion about keeping an eye on superpowered vigilantes, which made me think of Checkmate behind the scenes.
So. Yeah, so he's an ex-cop character who basically got him with the spies. And this may interest people that another ex-cop who ended up in Checkmate for a while was Harvey Bullock.
Oh.
So,
cool.
Yeah. That never stuck, though.
No. Now he's back in Gotham with his cats. So we then cut back to Evil Kalki. He's clearly in a bit of pain with whatever it is that his chest does to people. And we have yet another flashback. And this one's really interesting because it shows that his name is actually Professor Desai, which that sounds familiar. And he was working with a young scientist called Niles Calder.
It's also familiar.
Yeah. So we basically see that Professor Desai's wish is to one day see a world free of the horrors of the likes of smallpox and cholera. So they're basically working together to, try and eliminate disease and death itself. And Desai thought it would be best to experiment on himself. And that's when he injected himself with a quote-unquote mystery serum. And that's how he changed.
Jumped straight to human trials on himself.
Yep.
It's not good.
Not at all. So it turns out that he's having a freak out as he's recalling this. And then we cut back to the present time and his chest is opening up. It's like a portal in his chest. And who comes climbing out but Cliff Steele, Robot Man.
In a pretty tattered state.
Yes. Yeah. So Kalki's trying to command the portal. He says, back, I command you. And Cliff's just saying, you better believe I'm out of here, pal. And yeah, he does not look happy. Not at all. We cut back to the jungle. And we see Val being harassed by a couple of guards that have detected her presence and trying to get rid of her. And as the fight breaks out, she actually unleashes the negative energy being. And the guards freak the hell out.
Now, I thought this was odd because I got the impression the first issue that this would be a difficult thing for her to do or something she can't do at all now. And here it's just clearly it's just she hasn't wanted to. And two guards is apparently enough to make her do it.
I'm also a bit confused and was more confused in the next issue as to whether or not she actually launches the energy spirit or just turns into the being herself, because it's a bit not quite clearly explained.
Well, we don't see a classic Larry collapse from her, do we?
No. No. But then, yeah, we'll wait till we get to the next issue. Anyway, Robot Man is then trying to face off with Kalki and find out what the heck's going on in his damaged state. But of course, all of Kalki's guards turn up.
The action figure guards, yeah.
The action figure guards have arrived and all hell's breaking loose. So we've got Cliff facing off with them at one end of the complex that Kalki's got hidden away in the jungle. And we've got Negative Woman fighting them at the other end. So there's lasers and guards and violence
scientists
everywhere. Scientists cowering for their lives. It's all happening. And then Cliff tries to get away into a room to get cover. And then he and Val meet up again.
Yeah, not seen to each other since the 70s.
That's right. And of course...
In comic time, not in... Well, in real time, it's been the 70s. Could be 2 years in the comics, who knows?
Yeah, it's that's never clarified, but yeah.
No.
Comic book time, it's wibbly-wobbly. So, the room that they've met up in is actually the room where we saw the figure hooked up to all the medical devices. So they're in the med lab and Cliff starts freaking out saying, no, this is crazy. I saw this guy die. I saw them all die. And then of course a giant, because we haven't had a giant computer screen for a while, one of them activates and it's Kalki on the screen. And he's saying, yes, yes, that is Larry Traynor there before you on the bed. Now that you're here, Negative Woman, I think you shall serve my purposes far better. So he needs a negative energy for some reason. And that's where we close that issue.
Yeah.
What did you think of that one?
Yeah, it's a good bringing everyone to the same spot. So getting the old band back together. So Val Vostok is, you know, in the spy world, but now she's bumped into her old colleagues in a Doom Patrol-y type situation. They spend a lot of time in bases, don't they, the Doom Patrol? Enemy bases.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit like always the final act of a 60s James Bond film, isn't it?
I was thinking that exact same thing as I read the final issue that we're looking at tonight.
And we get a letters page, and there's a big thing down the bottom saying Millennium is coming, but it's not coming for the Doom Patrol, fortunately.
Yeah, you're not a fan of Millennium, are you, Paul?
Have you read it, Mike?
I have not.
That's where we differ. You get yourself, you read Millennium, and then you can tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
It's not the best DC crossover, and it was one that tried to do a little bit of retroactive history, set up a few really weird things, and then everyone just ignored it forever because it was so silly.
Right.
So,
I look forward to adding that to my DC events shelf.
Okay, on to issue 3, which has a very exciting cover with Val Vostok and Larry Traynor basically wired up together on beds, lots of monitors and things. So the two bandage characters with, Larry is sporting a pretty exciting outfit. Yeah, he's got the purple boots, the purple belt, the red jumpsuit with the white V down the front. Yeah.
Old school cool.
Old school cool. And Val is wearing green jeans. So this is the same creative team as the previous issue and the other one. So Lytle, Martin, and Paul Kupperberg writing. So let's get into it. And this one is called The Fire of the Gods. Dun, dun, dun. And opens with a rocket being loaded with a satellite. And we see that the countdown is on. And Kalki's doing a bit of crapping on about how exciting it is and how it's going to bring about the changes to the world and only the worthy will survive, which is presumably not many. He announces that Valentina's the negative energy being is inside the rocket. And I don't know why, but they're going to blow her up.
Yeah. I believe she's needed to power the satellite somehow.
Yeah. Comic book science.
Comic book science.
Then we see that, what's his name? Harry Stein is in his trench coat and his hat and smoking his cigar and wandering around the jungle. And he comes across some guards and gets into a firefight and falls into some mud and smokes those bastards. I don't know, actually, if they are bastards. I know nothing of their parentage. It's just an expression. I'm sorry.
Look, they're working for a bad guy, so I think it's fine to call them that. Yeah.
Yeah, when you sign up with a bad guy, you know, you deserve to get shot.
That's right.
Yeah. Then we cut inside the lab, and there's two doctors there who are about to take Larry off life support, and they're saying that's not really fair. And so they're having a bit of medical ethics discussion. And decide that they won't kill him. If Kalki wants to pull him off life support, he can have to do it himself, which is a good bit of, some ethics there on display. We get some more flashbacks to the chief saving Desai, Arani's. We can't say that yet, can we?
Well. We can, because it was already mentioned on the previous page. There's one small panel where Kalki says to Arani, isn't it time that you at last made peace with your father? So it's like, uh-oh.
I am your father.
Yes.
Yes. So, this is Arani's dad, who... In, trying a new serum opened a portal to a sort of hell dimension in his tummy, which is not very good.
I'm glad they didn't release that to the general public.
Imagine Johnson & Johnson having a recall on that. Or having that in the fine print of your drugs. Incontinence and...
incontinence and portals to demon dimensions opening in your body.
Yeah. So, yeah, Niles drugged him when this was all going on and then built him a sort of, I'm a supervillain type person now armor for him to wear, which stabilized him apparently. But he was driven insane.
Yeah, well, that's kind of understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell portal in your tummy, in your chest. Yeah. You would not be, well, there'd be quite a few things you wouldn't be able to do as normal after that.
That's right.
Yeah.
You'd go through some shirts, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, my buttons are undone again. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yes, moving on. So, yeah, Harry has infiltrated the base and he sabotages the power supply, so knocks out the power, and that enables Arani and Joshua to blow out their tubes. Not a metaphor. And Cliff's on. Cliff can now fight because they're not about to be killed.
Yes.
The thing stopping him. Yeah, fighting. And they confront Kalki, and Arani says she will face him alone for no reason. So the other two run off.
Well, it's like the classic standoff between you know, heroic child and evil parent, I guess.
Yeah. He says, it's only fitting that this be between us. And Cliff said, are you sure? And she said, go. And he said, okay. Okay, see what's
okey
on
dokey.
TV. Wanders off. And we see that the rocket has now launched and is streaking into the sky. There's lots of fighting in the base. They're beating off the troops, the armored toy line troops. Mm. It's lots of barricading doors, fighting, threatening people to find out what's going on. The scientists declare that they cannot stop it. They can destroy the rocket, but that will destroy Negative Woman's energy. Then we see that Arani is fighting her dad. He steps out of his Dodgem car and comes over. And, this is kind of weird. He detaches his... lower body.
Yeah.
And he separates his upper body, lifts up, so he loses his junk and his legs, and then he sprouts new legs out of his torso, opens up his chest full on, and tries to give his daughter a cuddle, not really at all.
Yeah, it's like ultimate attack form Kalki.
Yeah. And there's some very unsubtle stuff about having inner demons. Yeah. And she has to fight his inner demons. Anyway, back in the lab, they've decided there's no options. They've got to destroy the rocket. So they all look sad as they blow up the rocket. And lots of gritted teeth and heads down. And yeah, it's sad. And then we see that Arani is wrestling with all the things coming out of Kalki's chest. And then she manages to sort of flick the arms around, so they start grabbing Kalki instead of her. Mm. And then Kalki consumes himself. So everything in his chest pulls him inside himself, which is... And then we're just seeing this blood splat on the ground as we see the result after all the silhouetted horror of him
being consumed. Yeah, I think that was really well done, how you don't actually see what happens to Kalki other than shadows on the wall and Arani's reaction to that. That was awesome.
Yeah, and that's it. Everything's solved. They grab Larry to take him home. Everyone is surprised to see Larry still alive, but Negative Woman basically says the energy's mine and I'm not going to use it to revive Larry because it's mine. Mm-hmm. So no sharing there. And that sets up one of the upcoming plots that goes on for a little bit.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And that is the end of the issue. But there was a little one-page cutaway in the middle where we saw a woman arriving in Kansas City at the invitation of Arani, and she was sent a ticket and everything. And she's a very tall redhead.
She was also given a check for $10,000.
Like, well, I would travel to Kansas City for $10,000.
I guess I would too.
Yeah.
So, but yes, that's a future team member.
It is. We will find out more about her in the next issue.
So overall, Paul. That's cheery. So what did you think of this first three-parter of the quote-unquote new Doom Patrol?
It's beautifully drawn. It's exciting. It's got some good action. The designs are really... Like, I think at the time, it didn't strike me how much of a toy line it was. But now it just seems so obvious. Like, yes. You know, there should totally be action figures of this stuff because it just looks like it. It's fun. It's fairly straight. There's not much humor in it.
No.
You know, Kauke is sort of one note. He, you know, monologues and rants and everything. They don't really treat him like a person with mental illness. You know, so they don't try to, you know, see it as a tragedy. You know, they call him evil and everything, and then they're sad when he's dead. So
yeah. I do like how it does tie in well with what we were shown in the Showcase Presents issues in the 70s, and how it ties into the death of the original team in the 60s as well. I think it's a great opening arc for this run. Yeah.
And it brings the team back together. They've still, you know, they're not a happy bunch together. They're all suspicious of Irani and her obsession that she is Niles' wife. And, you know, Joshua is basically blackmailed into being on the team by having his life ruined. And, you know, because he has, he's on the run for deserting, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. That's why he creates that new persona. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Carmichael. Yeah. So it's good. It brings everyone together, connects them all, and sets up new things to come. So, I mean, the next new stage for this team is they're going to get some new younger members, and it's going to get a bit X-Men after this, isn't it?
Just a bit, yes. Just a bit. Yeah, I really enjoyed reading this again and reading it the first time because it was just so action-packed. It moves at such a pace, like the end of one issue and you get to the start of the next one and you've already got, you know, Josh and Irani in chains, and it just sort of doesn't overfeed you with information. It's just like, right, here's the logical continuation of what happened in the previous issue. So that was cool. Yeah.
And, I mean, it does go a bit into Irani's background, so we see, you know, her, like, her meeting with Niles, there's some doubt thrown on that. Was it random, or was it because Niles knew that her dad was this guy?
Yes.
I don't know.
We might have to read more.
Yeah.
You think we can read more Doom Patrol, Paul?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah, we seem to have the opportunity, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's it for Doomsplaining. So this week in the Mailbag of Doom, we asked people, what's your comic blind spot that you'd like to explore? And we heard from Bobgar Ornelas, who's at Slow-Mo, and he said, anything Toth. No excuse as to why I haven't read anything significant by him. Now that's Alex Toth, and I don't think I've ever read any Alex Toth, but I know that the comic professionals love him, so... Mm. He's one of the, you know, the people who know their stuff. They really like him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also heard from Karthik Kakarala. He said for him, it's comics from India as a region. He's barely read much of any relevant sort since he was a lad.
Yeah. We heard from Aaron Long, Juice005. Do you think this will be a non-trolling answer this week?
I'll let you know in a minute.
Okay, so he says, I have only one blind spot and it's going to stay that way. Crossed. I don't care what Mike says, I'm not reading it. Troll answer, there we go.
Such a troll.
It's good to know that everything's well in the universe.
Yes. David Scanlon at Maryland of Oz, he said, next wave, it remains the one that eludes him, but he will have it one day. Then maniacal laugh.
Oh, I love Next Wave, it's fantastic. You read Next Wave?
I have not.
Ah, oh, it's really good. And the trade I've got, it's got the letters pages in it, and bloody Martin Gray is, you know, he should have his name on the cover because he's got so many letters in the back of that trade. We have from Moby One, who's that's Moby One, and he said, Lazarus, Wade's Empire, Doom Patrol Omnibus, Birds of Prey, and he said the first three are on top of his pile of shame.
Moby One also said, a couple of years ago, he actually would have said Starman and Why the Last Man, but a certain legendary at reading underscore Hicks helped with those.
Huh. What a top bloke.
Sounds
top
like a bloke. Right bloke, yeah.
We have from Ange, Dr. Ange, and he said the DC archetype books by Alan Moore, Supreme, Promethea, or this Invincible, which I keep hearing is great. So I've read all of Supreme, and I've read, well, all of Supreme by Alan Moore, not the previous stuff. I've read a fair bit of Promethea, never read the whole thing end to end, so that's Alan Moore with J.H. Williams III. And I've read a lot of Invincible, which is good fun. So it's like, you know, kid realizes he's got superpowers.
Yeah.
And has to fight his dad, and it gets really gory. And
kids fighting parents once again.
Yeah, that's by Robert Kirkman, who does Walking Dead. So.
Okay. We heard from Richie O'Hara Beeman at Rickety OB. He said, to his brackets moderate to non-existent shame, he has never read The Invisibles by that there Grant Morrison chap. Sounds like a good un. Yeah, I think I've read one. Yeah, I know I've read one issue of The Invisibles.
Yeah. I've got one trade. I've read like five of the seven trades, and I read them out of order. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't really understand it, and I didn't find it incredibly compelling that I, you know, really wanted to go back and do it properly. But, you know, maybe that's the mistake I've made. I haven't. But, I mean, some good characters in it. It's good. Yeah. We heard from Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, underscore Oberts, and he said mid to late 70s Marvel B and C list stuff. So what's that? Ghost Rider and Iron Fist.
All of them.
And all that. They're all sure. B-list, is that what you're saying? Spider-Man's B-list.
Avengers, who? We heard from alias Saul Bishop at Arch Enemy Comics. He said, Judge Dredd. I don't feel like I've read nearly enough of those. Yeah, that's a good pile of stuff to get into. Yeah.
We heard from Steve T-Shirt Meter, who's at T-Park Met, and he said, I've never read Transmetropolitan. I think I should check that out. And, Transmetropolitan is very good. I recommend it. Yeah.
We heard from Astrakos 1, Avert Me Too Tolkien, who said, The Wicked and the Divine, and Fractions Hawkeye. I can highly recommend both of those, especially now that Hawkeye's finished.
I can recommend one.
Right.
Never read Wicked and Divine, and it really doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, it's not for everyone, but I still enjoy it. It's good stuff.
Good. Yeah. Read from Mike Lapine, who's that? Lapine is me, and he said it used to be Doom Patrol, but a certain podcast fixed that.
Oh,
I know what he's talking about. and I think I need to find a Legion podcast or start one. So there's a lot of Legion podcasts out there. So yeah, Legion is a common blind spot for many people, I've noticed.
We heard from Susan Canary at black underscore canary 02 on the Twitters. She said, I love Constantine, the TV show, and his appearances in different DC books, but I've never read the original Hellblazer. And then she said, I need to.
You should start with Dangerous Habits by Garth Ennis and what's his name? Sean, the guy who always hangs out with Brubaker now.
Not Sean Phillips?
Sean Phillips, that's it. Thank you, Mike.
Oh, that's twice now.
Yeah, Mike. The human Google.
I actually did read a few months back the first Hellblazer trade, and yeah, that was pretty dark stuff.
Original Sins, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And that spins out of Swamp Thing, and because that's where John Constantine came from, Swamp Thing. So I really recommend the Swamp Thing stuff too, if you haven't read that. We heard from Doug Zawisa, who's at D Zawisa, And he said, ROM, Micronauts, Eternals. I read the Neil Gaiman stuff, the Romita bit, but he hasn't read the original stuff. And NFL Super Pro. Some sort of super prostitute, I don't know.
Oh, my God. I think that was a new universe book, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I think it was.
Anyway, I've never read ROM, I've never read Micronauts, I've never read Eternals, and okay. I've never read NFL Superman, Super Pro.
Oh, look, we heard from Martin Gray, at Mark Gray, and he said, okay, The Invisibles, tried the first issue, it wasn't for me, but maybe it is.
Maybe it isn't, I'm thinking.
Wow, that's blunt.
We also heard from our good friend Rift, who's at Rift1821. And he said, Jim Starlin's Silver Surfer run. He says, all-time fave character. I have the rebirth of Thanos, and single issues, but would love to have it all. So, I've not read those myself.
We also heard from Capitan Frack, at Fractures on Twitter. And he said, The Invisibles, by Morrison.
Another one for that.
Blind spot.
Yeah. What's your blind spot, Mike?
Oh, so many to choose from. I will say the Valiant universe in general, because I hear and read good things about it, and I've only actually read a couple of trades of Harbinger, and that was actually kind of cool, but I've just never really gotten around to going back and revisiting it or continuing on. And now they've had the big Books of Death event come out, and I'm kind of like, okay, are they rebooting? Are they just killing everyone off? So I'm kind of still interested in it, but yeah, only so many hours in the day, so many dollars.
Yeah.
But yeah, their stuff does look interesting, and they get some good writers and artists on there. So maybe one day I'll get around to checking it out. I'm sure I'll get lots of hate mail about that now. What about you, Paul?
Well, you stole my answer, you thieving Queenslander. Yeah, Valiant's my blind spot. I have read a few little bits and pieces of the original stuff, Quantum and Woody and things like that, but I've never given the Valiant universe a good go.
Right.
Good old college try. But yeah, falling back to my secondary answers, which are probably pre-Crisis DC, so...
Okay.
Anything by Roy Thomas. Never read any of his stuff. But I'm not really driven to... Like, I don't know if I'll enjoy it, so I'm not really keen to, you know, go full on at it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Modern stuff, Alex and Ada, I'd say. That's a book that I'm interested in that I've never read. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but, you know, no one ever talks about it or likes it, so...
Well, actually... Yeah, no, I would highly recommend Alex and Ada. It's, I think you would enjoy it.
Oh.
That's just me personally. But yeah.
Cool. So that's it for the Mailbag of Doom. Now, if you want to get in on the ground floor for our next question, we're asking you, what's your favorite comic book annual?
Ooh.
So what's a really good annual, good story, one shot? Finale to a story, anything like that. So, put on your thinking cap, your Mento helmet, and give it. Have a good think about it, and we'll put that question on Twitter after this episode's up.
Yes,
not before.
And Facebook this week. I promise I will put the question up on Facebook this week.
Look, we are red hot on Facebook. There's so much activity there, isn't there?
So many likes, so many friends.
So much, so little time.
Oh dear.
Don't forget, you can contact us on Twitter at WFDpod, and our email is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we've got the Facebook page, as we said. And next week, I think we're going to look at Doom Patrol in the annuals, which is weird considering our question coincides with that. So.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to discussing what I consider one of my most hated issues of a Doom Patrol comic ever.
Wow.
It's going to be awesome.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So keep an eye on the Twitter. We put up fun things and interesting things, and we you know, we're always looking for what people are talking about with Doom Patrol, and Wilfred finds that and retweets it.
Yeah.
So
good work, Wilfred.
And I'm going to do my annual appeal for iTunes reviews, just so If you're on iTunes and you get our stuff and you think it's all right, stick a review on. Yeah, make it a sweet 5-star one if you think it's worthy. And, you know, I'd probably be quite entertained by a bad review as well.
Cool. I'd rather we didn't get a bad review. But after this episode, who knows? Okay, that's our show for this week, guys. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone.